You are Locked On MLB. Your daily MLB podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello, baseball fans. Welcome to Locked On MLB, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. This is the daily podcast. We talk about all of Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully. It is Monday, the 8th day of February, 2021. And I'm going to be talking a little bit today about some of the big player moves. A big free agent was signed, although not as big as I think his contract would make you think. A player who is as good as they get offensively might be a little bit on the bad side defensively, but I think the team is just fine with him. That player signed. And two players who could use a change of scenery gotta change of scenery. This show is available on the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app. We're also available wherever you get your podcast. And when you're staying at home during these trying times, be sure to tell your smart device to play Podcast Locked On MLB or check out some of the other great shows of the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On Fantasy Baseball with Scott Cullen. You can send us Sunday requests to my personal Twitter handle, which is at Sully Baseball. The show's Twitter handle is at Lockdown MLB Pod. And we're also on Instagram with that handle. I'm on Instagram at Sully Baseball Podcast. So I was thinking about something. Let's take someone if they had a full season. If you say, okay, we're going to sign a pitcher. And let's say there was a pitcher. I'm not big on wins and losses. Wins and losses are misleading. But let's have a record of 12-12, okay? But more importantly, an ERA of 3.78. Okay, not bad. Not great, but, you know, not certainly solid. 32 starts, 3 complete games, all of them shutouts, okay. 202 and a third innings, okay. Pitches a bunch of innings, struck out 257 in those 202. All right, more strikeouts than innings pitched. A good strikeouts to walk ratio, only 52 walks in those 202 and a third innings pitched. 85 earned runs, 164 hits. So, you know, roughly, averages roughly a base runner an inning, you know, 3.78 ERA. And something that I like to do is I like to take an average start. Like, of those 32 starts, this pitcher averaged 6 1/3 innings pitched. That's good. And about 2.5 earned runs per start, 8 strikeouts per start, about 5 hits per start, about 1.5 walks per start. That's pretty good. That's a pretty good starting pitcher. Probably a really solid number 2 or 3. An innings eater. Not an ace. Not a Cy Young contender for those 32, you know, starts, but certainly, you know, a quality pitcher. And if you have an ace, this is someone you would certainly want to have right behind him. Okay. So who is this pitcher I'm talking about? I'm talking about Trevor Bauer. Those were the last 32 starts of Trevor Bauer's career, which were the 11 starts that he had with the Cleveland Indians, of which he with the Cincinnati Reds in 2020, where he won the Cy Young Award. The first 11 starts he did with the Cincinnati Reds after his trade from the Indians, which is a big alarm bell that a contending team was willing to trade him at midseason and seemed to be thrilled to trade him. That's a red flag right there. And which he was dreadful during those 11 starts, an ERA over 6. And final 10 starts with the Cleveland Indians, of which he pitched well. He didn't pitch great, but he pitched well. So he had, if you break it into thirds, he had a pretty good third, a dreadful third, and an outstanding third. And you mash those together into what would be the equivalent of a season, and it's not a bad year. It's not a bad year. You know, again, I wins and losses are completely misleading. especially when you look at people like, you know, Jacob deGrom, who I think has been the best pitcher in the National League for each of the last 3 years. All due respect to Trevor Bauer and his third of a season that he pitched for the Reds last year. Everyone pitched a third of a season. It's unfair to single him out. But, you know, if you look at DeGrom's win-loss record, it's not that impressive. But he gets no support from the Mets, and they don't hit for him. The bullpen blows games for him. So you look at his average start, and that's an elite player. That's an elite pitcher. Bauer's pretty good. Bauer's pretty good. And that's exactly what the Dodgers are getting. The Dodgers are getting a pretty good pitcher. Now, and I can't ignore this, one with a ton of baggage. A ton of baggage of how he has been, you know, a harasser of people online in kind of a very nasty and not very fun way. And a kind of, this is step one of something potentially really bad. And the fact that the Indians were willing to trade him away when they were a very good team. They were a 90-win team battling for a playoff spot, and he was their trade chip. I know part of it is the fact that the Indians had a bunch of pitchers and they needed a bat down the stretch, but it's kind of alarming that he was the one they were willing to trade away. And so, I mean, that's what the Dodgers are getting. And the Dodgers have, you know, Walker Buehler. They have Clayton Kershaw. Obviously, they've got a ton. You know, May develop into a great talent. Urias may develop back into a good starting pitcher. And so you're basically acquiring Trevor Bauer to be exactly what I just described, which is a really good two or three on a playoff team. It's going to eat up innings, it's going to strike out batters, and everything like that. Now, of course, he was signed to a contract as if he was an elite player. As if he was, I mean, he is the highest, what, the highest per, or how do they say, the annual value? Is that how we're going to say it there? And Bauer, his deal was he was getting, he's going to get 40 million tomatoes and $45 million in 2022. Now, if a player can get that money, great. Good for them. And it's a three-year deal with all sorts of opt-outs. And I don't know how many of those opt-outs are in control of by the Dodgers if they don't want to pick up an option. This kind of contract is kind of is complex. In some ways, the Dodgers are the best fit for him because if he bombs out or if he pitches like the first 11 games in Cincy and not the last 11 games in Cincy, they have enough talent and enough money that they could survive it. And because there's going to be a tremendous amount of goodwill in Los Angeles for the Dodgers, based upon them winning the World Series last year, if he doesn't do great, then there's wiggle room for him. They're the defending champs. If he went to the Mets, I absolutely think that would have been a cataclysmic disaster if he went to the Mets. Because, first of all, he would have been overpaid and it would have been creating tension amongst the pitchers like Syndergaard and DeGrom, who, quite frankly, deserve the money more than Bauer and have done more for the team. And the first moments of cracking for Bauer in New York would be a media frenzy, and it would stink for him. His life would stink, and he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who responds well to things stinking. So the Dodgers paid top dollar for pretty good. The Dodgers paid the most per year for someone who will probably be their number three starter. And it'll probably help the Dodgers. And the National League West is going to have two tremendous teams with a ton of pitching depth, with San Diego and Los Angeles. And those teams will probably meet again in the postseason. I think those are looking like two of the most competitive teams in the National League and certainly can pitch with the best of them. Is Bauer as good as Gerrit Cole? No, of course not. Is Bauer as good as DeGrom? No. What are you thinking? Of course not. He is exactly what I just described him as. And I think without the great 11 games that he got, if he pitched pretty well, if he pitched the way he had normally, I think he would have got, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal because he doesn't want a long-term deal. He wants to bounce around. And there would have been no way he would have sniffed anything close to 40 million tomatoes a year. Dodgers can afford it. I think most teams can afford it. But here we go. This is what we got. The biggest paid player in baseball history is the Dodgers' number three starter.
Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Peter Bukowski hosts Locked On Today, a daily podcast breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes. Locked On Today. You can subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts.
Couple other moves to talk about. Marcell Ozuna, can you stop and think about the outfield the Marlins had just a couple of years ago? They had an outfield of Giancarlo Stanton, Christian Yelich, and Marcell Ozuna, and they're all gone. I mean, the Marlins have a decent team now, and I think they're going to be contenders. They made the postseason in the shortened season last year, and they were tremendously fun to watch. But holy cow, what an outfield they had. And look at Ozuna in his first year with Atlanta, after being dealt, he had a couple of years in St. Louis. His first year in St. Louis was pretty good. Well, his last year with the Marlins was spectacular. And then he went to St. Louis. His first year was okay. His second year was a little up and down. Comes to the Atlanta Braves and did everything they could possibly want offensively. You like traditional stats, leading the league in home runs and runs batted in, batting .338. And having the most total bases in the National League. You like more advanced stats? His OPS was over 1,000. He had the most plate appearances in all of the National League last year. And, you know, and other things, you know, you like situation wins added. Boom, first. Done. You like that? What else do you like? He had the third highest offensive win production. Boom, not bad. Not bad at all. And in terms of, I'm not very, I don't really follow WAR that much. He is the fourth highest WAR, offensive WAR, and the seventh highest overall WAR. I don't really always 100% know what that means, how you improve your WAR. All I know is that a lot of people like that stat, and I just threw it out there, even though I don't know how it's calculated. The guy can't field. The guy can't field, and we don't know if there's going to be a universal DH or not, which is crazy that we don't know. And as I've said before, I'm not a fan of the universal DH, but if they're going to have it, make a call. Make a call. By the way, it's weird. Ozuna was a gold glover in 2017, and now he's an iron glover. Isn't that weird how badly he can fall off the cliff in terms of defense? But do you know what? You stick him in center. You stick him in left field. Even if they don't have the universal DH, fine. You stick him in left field and you whisper, "Hey, Ronald Acuna Jr., you take care of most stuff. All right, you catch most of the balls, would you please? You know, and it's fine. His bat will make up for it." And I think it's a great fit. And I'm frankly glad that he's going back to Atlanta. I'm glad that he's going to be teammates with Acuna and Freddie Freeman and Dansby Swanson. I'm glad, and you know, Ozzie Albies. I'm glad that they have a bunch of players on that team that you can start to point to and say, yeah, those are the Braves. And as much as we are quick to anoint the National League champion to come out of the West, and you know, Lord knows you're going to have two tremendous teams with San Diego and Los Angeles. Lest we forget, the Braves are the defending division champ the last few years. The Marlins were a playoff team. The Mets are, there's talent on the Mets. The Nationals added John Lester to the team, added Brad Hand to the team, and you still have Juan Soto, and they won the World Series just a couple of years. The last full season we had, they won the World Series, and the Phillies have a lot of talent. That entire division is super tough, which makes me wonder if that's going to hurt the division winner, that they're going to be beating each other up. Meanwhile, the Central has the St. Louis Cardinals and a bunch of tomato cans. I think the Cardinals are going to run away with the Central unless the Brewers, do something to dust themselves off to get off the mat. But, what I'm saying is the East is going to be tough. The Braves are the defending champs a couple of years running now. And adding, bringing Ozuna back and making sure they keep that bat. That's I'm happy when stuff like that happens. I like Ozuna, and I like a bunch of the players on that team. Atlanta's going to be a fun team to watch. Not all the fun. I'm here in Los Angeles County, so you could accuse me of having West Coast bias. And I do think the Dodgers and the Padres are the two best teams in the National League right now. But don't sleep on Atlanta. But, that was a situation where I think he found the right home. He was a wonderful player in Miami. He had mixed results in St. Louis. And now he's found the change of scenery that's worked. Now, change of scenery happens to be the exact thing that happened in the deal that happened between Oakland and Texas. And Chris Davis, who spells his name with a K, not to be confused with Chris Davis, who spelled his name with a C. Wasn't it weird that we had a home run leader named Chris Davis, and the same decade we had another home run leader named Chris Davis? They spelled their names differently, and they both were those superpower hitters, not the super high average hitters. Of course, the surreal thing about Chris Davis, we all know, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, he finished with the exact same batting average every single year. It's just weird. Led the league in home runs in 2018. Three straight years, he hit 40 home runs. Last year in the shortened season, he did not have a productive 99 plate appearances. Oddly, he hit more home runs in the playoffs, three, than he did in the 30 regular season games he played, two. But, he's a bit of a swing from his heels masher. And while I don't quite have a grasp on the new stadium in Texas, which, by the way, the new stadium in Texas, where they wound up playing the World Series last year, looks kind of boring. It looks kind of dull. I loved the old ballpark in Arlington that had a ton of character. I don't see the character yet in the new Texas stadium. Maybe I have to grow into it. But if Texas is indeed a home run hitter's park, like Texas always has been in the past, then, maybe a little change of scenery, dust himself off, a little jolt of life. Change can do you good. Which brings us to Elvis Andrus. And Elvis Andrus, 12 years with the Rangers, part of the two World Series teams, the 2010 and 2011 World Series, part of that great run they had where they were in the playoffs in 2010, 2011. They were in the wild card game in 2012. They played until game 163 in 2013, winning the division in 2015 and 2016. And he hit home runs in the postseason. He had a home run in the 2016 division series against Toronto, where he actually had a very good season, a very good playoff that year. And he batted .333 in the ALCS when the Rangers finally went to the World Series and they beat the Yankees. He's been a great Ranger, but the last couple of years have been really, last year was terrible for him. He just was a mess. And the last couple of years have been a combination of injuries and his production sliding. But as recently as 2017, he put together a good year. offensively, he was a 20 home run. He was a 20-20, 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases, batted .297. His OPS was .808 at shortstop. And, you know, in the last 3 years have been a struggle for him. But, again, this could be a situation where maybe him struggling on the team and the franchise we had so much success with, maybe a change of scenery will help. You know, there's a trade that was made with a classic member of the Texas Rangers where it was two players who were swapped and resulted in success for both of them. Kenny Rogers, who had a wonderful, career with Texas, first as a solid reliever and then became an all-star caliber starter, threw that perfect game, made the all-star team in 1995. Then he went to the Yankees where he had mixed success. He wore, that being kind, he was mediocre in his first year, won a ring with the 96 team, but was not very effective. It was terrible in 1997. And he was traded to Oakland in 98, and he recaptured his magic. He became a good, solid pitcher again, and eventually became an all-star again and had some wonderful years with Oakland, with Texas, and with Detroit. And the change of scenery was what he needed because it wasn't working for him in New York. And that trade was with Oakland, and who the A's sent to the Yankees was a infielder who had some pretty good years for the A's, but then started slumping and had a terrible 1997 and needed a change of scenery. And that was Scott Brosius. And Brosius, is basically, let's each send a veteran who needs just to clear their head. And Kenny Rogers got out of New York, became an all-star again, and Brosius became an all-time beloved Yankee. He only played, this is one of these things, you think of Scott Brosius as a Yankee. He had an 11-year career, four of them were with the Yankees, and the rest of them were the A's, but nobody thinks of him with the A's. They think of him being the World Series MVP in 98, hitting the huge home runs, especially the one off of Trevor Hoffman in the World Series, hit one of the dramatic home runs, bomb, in the 2001 World Series when the Yankees were on the verge of losing Game 5. Gold Glover, big hits, big home runs, and as I said, was the World Series MVP in 98, but also had a great World Series against Atlanta in 1999, got a bunch of big hits against the Mets in the 2000s, became an all-time beloved Yankee, winning three World Series rings in the process. And that change of scenery was the jolt that he seemed to need, and Kenny Rogers, for that matter, too. So Chris Davis could have, after slumping through a bad 2020 and a disappointing 2019, could be like, oh, I'm in Texas, there's no pressure on me, I can just start swinging from my heels. And maybe Elvis Andrus can reach back and say, like, all right, the A's need a shortstop. The Rangers have a bunch of infield prospects who they want to play. And so now they've opened up that slot. The A's need a veteran shortstop, especially after losing Marcus Semien to the Toronto Blue Jays. So you're not asking Elvis Andrus to replace Marcus Semien. You're just saying, hey, you've got the job. Just do the job. Make sure that shortstop isn't a hole. And there we go. Now this could be a complete bust for both of these players. Or could help one and not the other. Or could, what I'm hoping for, because I like Elvis Andrus, and hell, I like Chris Davis. I'd like to see them both do well. Wouldn't that be funny to look at a trade where both teams did well? I just talked about that deal involving Kenny Rogers and Scott Brosius. Both teams got something out of that deal. And eventually, Kenny Rogers was dealt to the Mets, where he became hated because he walked in the pennant-winning run in the World Series in the NLCS against the Atlanta Braves. The A's wound up getting, when they traded him to the Mets, wound up getting Terrence Long, and Terrence Long became an important player on the team's that wound up going to the playoffs all those years. And so there you go. There can be two winners of a trade. It doesn't always have to be one team fleecing the other. So the hot stove is heating up, and supposedly we're going to have spring training pretty soon. Would not mind seeing it. So go to the free and easy-to-use Himalaya podcasting app and check us out wherever you get your podcasts. Breaking down the moves as the trucks are starting to head down, and maybe we're going to have spring training. This is Locked On MLB for the 8th day of February, 2021. I'm your host, Paul Francis Sullivan. Please call me Sully.